Oh my god, welcome back to the Villain Edit.
What?
Yeah, I'm adding some excitement to it.
All right.
We're excited to hear you. We can't hear them.
So excited.
Hi, I'm Monty Ashley.
I'm Ryaz Hall.
This is Ryaz Hall, who picks up on a cue very well.
Thank you.
There are so many shows to talk about this week because things are blowing up in our corner of nonsense television land.
Yeah.
Before we get to the new shows that we're adding, Face Off season finale.
Sure, let's finish out our Face Off. As you recall from our last exciting episode, everybody made a monster for Glenn's haunted house,
which we weren't that impressed with as a haunted house concept.
It's only got three rooms.
And one of them is called Hell, which seems like the very first idea you'd have.
Yeah, that doesn't seem real creative, but that's fine. He wanted his haunted house, he's got his three rooms. They had to make a mad scientist and a monster for the first room, a cultist and a god being summoned for the second room, and Asmodeus and...
An imp
for the third room.
The twist was, of course, to make an additional creature that was a floater, or someone who runs around shouting at people in the waiting room.
Right. They run around trying to gross out people who aren't waiting to go into the ride.
This is the same twist as every twist on this show, and every twist also on Project Runway is make an extra look.
Yes.
But I appreciated that they gave them an extra helper. One of the helpers was Al, the
old guy that just spent the whole episode working on a mandible. Al, I like to call him.
He also got kind of sidelined on this one. He was on making nose duty. He was making a nose most of the...
Yeah, they just gave him, like, one little task and said, make a nose, and he's like, I'm on it!
It's weird. Like, he's clearly a team player, but I feel like I never got to see what it is he's good at unless they were all consciously sidelining him every time we saw him. Anyway, I'm not crazy about the finales of Face Off. Because a lot of times you can't get a really good look at things.
And that did continue this season because of the way that they lit the rooms in the haunted house.
Yeah, Hell was just a dark, dark red. So until Asmodeus, as they kept calling him, jolted forward, always in danger of losing his horns.
Yes.
He was just flat red.
Right. The horns they did by making, it's not shrink wrap. What's the word I'm looking for?
Palette wrap?
No. The machine that shrinks the stuff.
Vacuum form?
Yeah. The horns, they did some sculptures and vacuum formed them. They were much lighter than the horns they had made before, but they were also kind of floppy.
Yeah.
But you didn't see them from behind as a person in the haunted house. As a person watching the show, you did see them from behind, and it was hilarious.
Andrew improved his mad scientist character a lot. He added a kind of a head wound, which I feel is overdone. Wounds are easy to make, so everybody makes their monsters wounded. Like, they'll say, this is a serial killer, and there's an axe stuck in his head. And I always think, that's less scary than a serial killer that doesn't have an axe
exactly,
stuck in his head.
Exactly, because he's already got damage, so you could probably take him down.
He's got an axe for me to grab right there. But this scientist looks really great, and he has a cool... Not quite prosthetic arm, but kind of a
mechanical arm attached to his regular arm.
And it's full of a bright green light stick liquid.
I didn't like that when they made the wound on his head, they just stuck some random gears into it to make it look, I don't know, steampunk?
That's what gears do. That's how gears work.
Oh, you just put them on things to make them look steampunk.
Yes, that's why they were invented. Didn't you see Hugo?
No.
You did see Hugo, and you liked it.
I did like it.
I feel like we talked about most of the looks last week pretty strongly.
Yeah, there were some changes made, like the lizard god that rises up out of the tomb had much better fingers. They just made some longer finger prosthetics instead of giant crab hands.
Honestly, most of the improvements were getting rid of Roy's fabrications.
I felt bad about that, because Roy came all the way in to work that one day,
but
the wing that he made fell apart.
The horn didn't work, and they had to be replaced. The big hands looked fake, and they had to be replaced.
Yeah.
None of Roy's work survived to the finale, but it was great to see him.
Now, I personally thought the Asmodeus sculpt looked kind of like Glenn Hetrick.
I don't see it myself, but if you say so.
If you look at the nose, it's definitely got Glenn's nose, but... that's probably me just reading too much into it.
Well, in the end, the winner was Andrew.
Who, mad scientist and monster.
Great mad scientist. My favorite look of the season, which says something about how I wasn't that impressed with this season.
It was not a great season.
There was a lot of mechanical flaws, a lot of edges, a lot of mold lines, which we shouldn't ever see.
Lots of really, really big mold lines, which, I don't know, cover those with something.
Yeah, but I really like this mad scientist, and it worked out well for him that he is a mask designer, and the final thing was to make a rubber mask, but he made a good rubber mask, and congratulations.
Exactly, and apparently he's selling that mask on his website. Good for him.
Yeah. Would you like to segue into the new television show Game Face, or should we save that for later?
We can segue into Game Face, since it does have one of the people that was on this yeah. season of Ink Master. So how Game Face works is it's basically a Cupcake Wars format, where you get four contestants, and then each round one gets eliminated. And each round they have to do a monster. And let's see, they don't have to do any sculpting or anything. They just have drawers of prosthetics they can use however they'd like.
In this case, in the pilot, the first round, everybody got a random pair of ears, and they had to design a creature around those ears.
Yeah.
The contestants were people, half of whom I recognized. There was Roy. We just saw Roy helping out on regular Face Off. There was Faina, who we just saw on this season.
Yes.
There was George, who is from Puerto Rico, and I don't remember much, but since he was on Face Off.
He was on Face Off. I know I've seen him. I remember his accent.
Since he worked on Face Off, he worked on Star Trek, Z Nation, and Daredevil, so that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Roy has worked on Captain America Civil War, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, and Mockingjay.
Faina got a job at a mask-making shop, and I really, really hope it's the mask maker that won.
Yeah. I like this because, although this is a fun show to watch, I really enjoyed Game Face. One of the key things it does is emphasize that people who have been on Face Off go on to have careers in this industry.
Yeah.
Like, sure, V. Neil liking you helps a lot, but working on multiple giant Marvel movies, that's great work, Roy.
It is. Good for you.
And then the fourth person was Jasmine, who I sort of remember.
I remember her.
The only credit she gave is that she worked on the Tupac biopic All Eyes on Me.
I believe she said Tupac biopic.
Some people say biopic. I say biopic.
I say biopic, too. I think biopic is wrong, and if you say it that way, you're a bad person.
Hot take.
Yeah.
The judges, apparently they're going to change judges pretty frequently. The judges this time were V. Neil, everybody loves V, Aaron Kruger McCash, who has been a guest judge on Face Off, and has done pretty much everything that
she does.
That one guy does.
Right, she's American.
Ryan Murphy. Yeah.
She's Ryan Murphy, so she does all the cool American Horror Story stuff, which I don't like the show, but I do love the makeups.
And also,
so good for her.
Also worked on that O.J. Simpson show, which had pretty good makeup there, too, just not monster makeup.
Yeah.
And Rick Baker, who is the greatest.
He is a special cinnamon roll. He is too good for this world.
Now,
I love Rick Baker so much. His Instagram is amazing, guys.
In these short form, what I call short form reality shows, there's a lot of spots where the judges have to be shown bantering to justify them sitting there the whole time. These judges were okay at it. The worst banter is on Barbecue Pitmasters.
Where they're just saying, he needs to throw another coal on that.
No,
he ain't got enough elderflower.
They don't actually refer to what's going on down there at all. It's just, well, now, if I'm cooking this, I'm cooking it at 225 for 8 hours. That'll give me the tenderness I want. Me, I like 275 for 7.5 hours. Oh, yeah? Well, I don't like... And they're
just talking about how they would cook it.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Like, it's on theme, but it's not at all spontaneous. The best spontaneous banter for my money is on Forge and Fire, where it really looks like the judges are watching and reacting, sometimes in horror, to the things
yes.
they see.
Yeah, somebody quenches in water, the judges are horrified, sometimes they're worried that things are going to break and come flying across the room.
And they can't even look sometimes.
Yeah.
And on Game Face, the judges were reacting to what was going on.
Yeah, and they were talking a little bit about things like, well, if I were
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of them thought this looked like fun, and they would have loved as a kid or even now to just be let loose in a giant room full of prosthetics.
Oh, yeah. I would love
art.
To watch that. Get some of the winners of the last three seasons of Face Off to judge them.
Yeah. So in the first round, just going really quick into this because we have so many shows I want to talk about. Jasmine made what looked like a neat fawn. She made great use of a huge horned headdress she found in a box.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what you mean, the fawn. I thought you... Yeah. Yeah. It was very good, and she won. The only thing she got yelled at was for the headdress being too big and covering the makeup, yeah. Which she found the headdress in a box. What can you do?
Roy was way, way behind, and instead of painting with a normal size airbrush, he found an airbrush designed for spraying cars and just went nuts
on his
goblin.
Yeah, like a house size airbrush. He's like, I just got to cover a lot of area fast. His goblin was really cute.
Yeah, it had a cool attitude. Like, just friendly and kind of dumb, a big, wide, placid smile.
Liked him.
And he made a really neat choice to kind of not paint the nose.
The eyebrow areas.
So they were extra bulbous and not all that green. And it worked really well.
Yeah, I liked it.
Fina made something that looked like Topo Gigio.
It did. It looked just like Topo Gigio the mouse puppet.
Yeah, everybody knows who Topo Gigio was. Topo Gigio was an incredibly huge star.
I do not understand the popularity of Topo Gigio, but I do enjoy saying it.
Topo Gigio is spelled T-O-P-O-G-I-G-I-O, and was a huge pop culture celebrity on The Ed Sullivan Show.
He was, but he's basically just a little unexpressive mouse puppet with giant ears.
Yes. Well, unexpressive, more expressive than Ed, though.
Well, that's true.
That's what people come here for, right? Hot Ed Sullivan burns?
Yeah.
Fina went home at round one. Seemed fair. In round two, everybody was given postcards that were supposed to be where their creation was from.
We're going to give you a picture. This is where your creation is from. Work from there. So, what were our postcards?
Jasmine had catacombs.
They looked awesome. They were candlelit. They looked like a place I would like to hang out.
Yeah.
But apparently she thought they were the gates of hell.
So, she kind of went a minimalist thing with, like, sunken eyes. Because what kind of monster would live down in the caves? All right.
Yeah, kind of a troglodyte-looking zombie-ish guy. Kind of green and moldy-looking. I didn't think green and moldy was the color to go with. I would have gone with a more gray rock color.
George had the sewer. So what did he make?
He made an alligator lady. Sort of.
With cool textured skin. Not a lot of makeup, but when he got close.
Yeah, when you got close, you could see that the makeup was... But the makeup was white, and I understand he was trying to do a play on albino alligator, but I felt like it needed something to contrast with the white, because otherwise it just looks like a whitewashed fence with some cool texture on it.
Whitewashing a fence? That sounds like fun. How do I get in on that?
I'll tell you tomorrow, sweetie.
Roy had a padded cell. What did Roy make for his padded cell?
A padded cell? You would think he would make some sort of a crazy person who had mutated.
Sure.
What did Roy make?
Roy made a fish monster that looked a lot like Dr. Zoidberg, because he liked...
Ooh, I love Zoidberg!
He cut up strips of latex to make the tentacles coming down the face, and he mounted fake eyes on the outside of the head, and then masked off the center with some gauze so that the model could see out, but it didn't look like the face was there.
I really, really liked this makeup.
My problem with it was...
I didn't like the paint job.
I did not like how completely disconnected it was from the concept of a padded cell.
Well, here's the story.
Okay.
There's this guy, and he gets off a bus, and it's in, like, the... Massachusetts.
Okay, guy gets off a bus in Massachusetts.
And he starts raving crazily about how he's found this horrible town where all these people are turning into fish people, so they lock him up.
Right.
Turns out, he's one of them that he didn't know about his Innsmouth ancestry. It's the oldest story in the book.
It's literally not the oldest story in the book.
Shut up. You don't know what book I'm talking about.
The book is The Complete Lovecraft, and it's not the oldest story in it. It's just not factually correct.
I'm just saying I thought it was a great deep one makeup, but it could have used it was a little one-dimensional with the paint. It was too pink and orange, and it needed some dirt. It needed to be dirtied up a little.
To be fair, he only had 90 minutes. Like,
no, I thought for a 90-minute makeup, it was amazing.
Roy's explanation at no point justified the fish person. At one point he said, well, I was thinking I could put any sort of creature in a padded cell I want. So this is a psychiatrist in the asylum.
Yeah, I don't understand. Well, the fish creature was wearing a lab coat.
It was. I like that the lab coat said Dr. Kafka on it. I think that's just because that's what the lab coat says.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
Like,
but yeah, it wasn't a real... My story is better than Roy's.
It is. Roy did not have time to make a story. He was frantically making Zoidberg.
Yes.
Roy and Jasmine stuck around. George went home. Round three, cyborgs. Specifically like the Borg.
Yes.
As created by, as we all know, Mackenzie Westmore's father, Michael Westmore, who I really...
Oh, did he do that?
Yes, he did. I really hope that Michael Westmore will come be a guest judge.
Oh, that would be nice.
He hasn't done any judging on Face Off. He seems happy to just come in, mentor, and leave. But come on, Rick Baker doesn't want to be mean either, and he's willing to come be a judge.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to be a regular judge. He said on his Facebook that he thought every... Or on his...
Instagram,
that he really enjoyed being on the show, but he's uncomfortable judging people, especially when they're all so talented.
Yeah, I think they're just going to have a lot of different judges come in, because this is a show with a pretty deep bench of guest judges.
Oh, yeah.
And one thing Face Off really does well is make it feel like people are still part of the family. Like, if V isn't here, we go to Lois Burwell first. Yay, Lois Burwell!
Yeah.
Like, some seasons... Patrick Titopoulos is the one who directs the final challenge. Hey, Patrick Titopoulos!
Yeah.
So I would like to see Michael Westmore take on that role, but if he doesn't want to, that's fine. Anyway, the way they made cyborgs was they had a table full of electronic stuff and were told to glue them to their models' faces. This seems like something good for Roy.
Who's used to gluing random things to other things?
Roy's look... I felt was about an hour. He needed about another hour because he was fabricating a skull thing.
He presented something with a lot of unfinished, unpainted EVA foam. And that's not the way to go.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Jasmine did a much more finished look. Not that original a look. It was like, here's a bunch of electronics and the guy's eye pokes through it. But
yeah, yeah. But it was a good-looking thing. She did a nice face shield out of plastic. She worked his actual hair, which was in cornrows, into the design because he had metal beads in his hair. So she, like, made that part of the design. I liked her Borg.
Yeah. Anyway, this is a super fun show. You don't need to keep track of people from week to week.
Yeah, you don't need to remember who any of these people are unless you're working with them in the industry.
Yeah. So I'm certainly going to keep watching Game Face.
I'm very excited about Game Face. Also, I really like the format because it's quick and easy. And I don't have to experience the heartbreak of people not being able to open their molds.
Yeah. And there was a brief moment of cooperation. They don't have a lot of time to be nice to each other, but there was some, hey, can I have that white paint? Sure, here we go. You got it, great.
Yeah.
Now, there are a couple of new shows coming in. I'd like to get Ink Master out of the way.
We all want to get Ink Master out of the way.
So,
It continues to go on.
I think it's neat that they didn't have a very special episode for Oliver Peck coming back from his heart attack. If this were You Think You Can Dance and Mary Murphy had a heart attack, every single dance the next week would be about Mary Murphy's heart attack.
Yeah, Oliver, they just mentioned
even
that
the crumping.
They're like, oh, Oliver's got a medical condition. He's in the hospital. Then when Oliver came back, they're like, oh, he had a heart attack. Let's get on with the show. Which I thought was kind of nice. I hope that Oliver does well and recovers easily. He seems like an okay guy.
He clearly didn't want to make a big deal out of it. And I respect that.
This week's challenge was adaptability. But I think that everyone had a different idea of what adaptability means.
And that means the judges, Nunez and Peck, did not agree on what they were talking about either.
No.
So the challenge worked like this. There are 8 teams of 2 left. So they are first going to be divided into 4 two teams of four. So my team has four teams on it. Your team has four teams on it.
Right. It has one person from each of four teams on my team. Right.
Right. So now one person from each of those four teams will be tattooing one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse all onto one canvas at the same time.
Right. So each person tattoos a horseman. They're all tattooing simultaneously on one canvas.
Then one of the teams wins, one of the teams loses.
Ta-da!
Very few people thought past that point. It looked to me like Clean Rock One was the one who said, I know what's going to happen. The bottom team, the person who doesn't tattoo, is then going to have to tattoo against the other three.
Right.
This is so complicated.
This is so complicated.
It's just a tattoo show, and there's so many moving parts to this. One thing that really struck home during this episode was I have no idea who these people are. We paused on the screen.
And we had to write down everyone's names and who they worked for, which by episode 11, I would think I would know that. But no, I just know, oh, that's that lady with the red hair, yeah. And that's the guy with the tribal tattoos on his cheeks.
Like, at one point, the names of four teams are on the screen. It says Basilica, Golden Skull, Old Town, Artistic Skin Design. Both members from each of those teams are also on the screen. We still don't know who's who.
Yeah, we were trying to match them up, and we had to pause it, and it took us a good couple of minutes. And then we found out we found out I was wrong.
My notes were Basilica, that's the team with Christian on it, Golden Skull, that's Clean Rock One, Old Town, guy with baseball cap, Artistic Skin Design, red-haired girl, and that guy who shouts a lot in interviews.
Yeah.
That's better than my descriptions of the other four teams.
Yeah.
Who I could not name on a bet. So, both teams did the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, and I learned that my idea of the Four Horsemen doesn't match everybody's, I guess.
Yeah, because there were some weird things going on with those horsemen.
It's supposed to be war, pestilence, famine, and death. But both teams had two guys that looked like war.
Yeah, and they had clearly been given notes because they had a guy with a sword, they had a guy with bow and arrow, they had a guy with a scale.
Yeah, the scales of justice sort of thing.
Yeah, and then they had a guy who was the Grim Reaper.
A guy with a scythe. So I'm like, the guy with the scythe and the skull face, that's death. The guy with the scales, I think that's famine because he looks skinny, except one of the horses looked green, so maybe he's pestilence. And the other two guys just look like war to me.
Yeah, there was a guy with a bow and arrow and a guy with a sword, and they sometimes seem to be attacking each other.
Yeah. So the big controversy was, how cohesive do the tattoos have to be? One team, they looked very cohesive, but their overall quality wasn't as good as the other team that looked like four different artists did them.
Right.
Argue. Peck thinks one thing.
But the word for the day is not cohesiveness. It's adaptability.
Well, are you supposed to adapt to other people's drawing styles, which I think is what Oliver Peck thought?
That's what Oliver thought. He's like, you have to adapt your style to match everyone else's so that these tattoos all look like they were done by one artist.
So
that's what Oliver thought they meant.
Nunez, I don't know what he thought adaptability meant. He was just judging on who did the best tattoo, and he liked the other team. Finally, Dave Navarro had to decide between the two teams. The four people who had not tattooed and were on the bottom team then had to tattoo against each other. This time, adaptability means you don't get any stencils, you don't get any reference material. You have to freehand draw on your canvas and then tattoo it. But the good news is, there are no rules. You can tattoo anything you want.
So everybody did an okay tattoo, which was nice.
Yeah, I liked them. I actually wrote down people's names here. Christian. I know who Christian is because he talks a lot. He's been running the show.
Yeah, he's the guy with the tribal tattoos on his face.
He's the bald guy, the biggest bald guy.
Yeah.
He did a girl's face with black eyes, and I thought it looked awesome.
Yeah, kind of a gray and black piece. Very nice, zombie girl, super pretty, no rotting flesh. I was okay with that.
A guy named Aaron, who is Clean Rock One's spindly pal.
Yes.
He did a skull with triangles all over it.
Yeah, like floating triangles. It had kind of an 80s feel.
They were mostly okay. It was mostly an okay skull. The teeth looked weird when they connected to the...
Where the teeth connected to the skull didn't seem like it came forward.
But, you know...
But whatever.
It was recognized as a skull. Bubba, I could not identify Bubba on a bet. He did a flower. It was a lovely flower.
Yes.
Like, that's a real good flower, Bubba.
Yeah, it was beautiful. The lines were sharp. It was a bright color. Dane did a wolf, and I think he was trying for...
Dane is the guy who shouts in all of his interviews.
He's very excitable, young, skinny guy. He's on team with the girl with the red hair.
He always sounds really disbelieving in anything that's happening.
Yeah.
And his wolf, I thought it was okay. It had weird anatomy, but it was cartoony.
It was kind of an old school tattoo type thing. It was fine. There was nothing really wrong with it.
They sent him home, and now he's gone.
Yeah, but no one hated his tattoo. They said, you know, when you get down to this point in the game, sometimes you got to send home people who did decent tattoos.
Yeah. So that takes us, we're going into episode 12. There are now only 7 teams.
Oh my God.
And at this point, I would like to transition to a television show called Project Runway.
Oh, Project Runway. Who's on that?
With my eyes closed, I can name Deontay. I can name Sean Butendorp. She's the one with a shaved head. I could name Claire Butendorp. She's the one with hair. They explained how to do their names. Let's see. Who else can I name without even looking? There's Cha-Cha. I remember Cha-Cha. Cha-Cha went home for being the weirdo who doesn't have any sense of what anyone else is doing.
Cha-Cha was super, super annoying and also, I don't think knew how to sew.
Let's see, there's Kentaro. Kentaro was quiet, but seems pretty serious and good at what he does. There was Aaron. Aaron is the aggressively genderqueer one who got on my nerves right away, not for wearing a dress, but for wearing one sock garter that wasn't even attached to his socks.
Yeah, you don't wear a sock garter without attaching a sock to it. That is so lame.
However, Aaron seemed really good at what he does.
Yeah, what they do.
Yeah, it's good. Sorry. There's Batani, who looks great.
Oh, yeah, she's beautiful, and she wears so many colors and patterns, and she's an African-American lady. I loved her.
Here's the thing. After one episode of Project Runway, I can name any of them that come on screen, and I even have opinions on what they're good at and what their aesthetics are.
Right. Why can't we do this with a show about tattoo artists?
No, I've been taking notes on Ink Master, and there's just so many of the same guy. Like, one advantage of Project Runway's aggressively diverse casting is that I can be like, oh, this person does not look like that person. That is bald black lady, not white professor lady.
White professor lady.
White professor lady is Amy Bond, and I already know that I'm skeptical of her because in her interview she said, "My trunk is packed full of wisdom, so I don't think this is going to be that hard." So I'm like, "Oh, she's got hubris, but
she does have a lot of hubris.
But she has a lot of technical skill, and look how much I already know about her. I have opinions on
exactly, her, which we did not have on Ink Master, and I don't know. Well, first off, Project Runway gave us that preview show, which was The Road to the Runway, where we got a segment on each of these people, which is hugely helpful. Tell me more about various tattoo companies. Where are these guys from? Yeah. You know,
Give me something besides shouts a lot and thinks everybody but him is awful. Like, the Butendorps, they took up a lot of the oxygen in the room, but also, they were brilliant to have on the show because in the first episode, it's one of those things where everybody comes into the big room one at a time and meets each other before the judges show up.
Right.
And they were aggressively going up to everybody who came and saying, "Hi, welcome to the show. It's so good to meet you. What's your aesthetic? What do you work on?"
Yes, they were perfect for that. They were so outgoing. now, and helpful. I don't like them.
Nobody seems to like them.
I'm an introvert, and they kind of make, and I'm just not, they're just not the kind of person I'm used to dealing with, but I'm so glad they're on the show.
People accuse them of having a stilted and mannered way of speaking, which I personally do not object to. I like people that sound like they have thought about what they were going to say and may have rehearsed it in their heads a few times before saying it.
They do have a stilted way of speaking. It's very much like the fanboy accent that you sometimes get.
Yeah, and they stall sometimes saying, indeed, yes, this. I'm a very serious person, and I understand what you're saying, and now that I've stalled a bit, I'm going to have my answer, but I like that.
Indeed.
So the thing is, Project Runway is such a professional show that knows what it's doing on these things.
Yeah.
And even though some things are a little worrying, like the accessories wall is now JCPenney.
Oh, well, look.
It's the JCPenney accessories wall.
Oh, that's fine.
Is it?
Hey, JCPenney's going to give him some money and some accessories. It's fine.
For the avant-garde challenge, we're going to have the JCPenney accessories wall?
Let's see what they can do with it.
All right. The first challenge was a red carpet challenge, which I love. Just, that's all we're telling you. What people have learned is that if you make nonsense, you have to say that your red carpet is the VMAs.
Right. If you've made the ridiculously dumb costume and it looks awful, you could say, but it's for the VMAs. And they'll say, oh, the VMAs. That's right. Lady Gaga wore a dress made out of meat. You can't be crazier than that.
So, we should talk about the models.
The models are of all different shapes, sizes, races. It's awesome.
Well, they said they were for all different shapes.
They are. There's a plus size model there. She's probably a size 16, 13, 16. I mean, she's not a super large, but in plus size models, that's about as good as you get.
Yeah.
I mean, they're doing their best.
We also had the model mirror, where we got to see models do interviews on what they thought of their dresses.
Which I kind of liked.
Yeah, I liked that. I also really liked this innovation that they're doing, I don't know why, where all of this, coming back from commercial, everything starts like 10 seconds before they say action. So when it's runway time, you got to see the wrangler telling
lining
the models.
Up the models.
Line up. You're going to go, ready, and go. And I like any shot from backstage of anything. I think that's awesome. So I super appreciated that. It's like I really liked when that one jerk quit last season or the season before, because the cameras followed him, and you got to see, like, oh, there's some makeup touch-up stations right behind the runway. That makes sense.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
So do you want to talk about the actual dresses?
I
did not care for Cha-Cha.
I really like your, what I see over your shoulders written on your computer. Cha-Cha's sketch looks like Sirhan Sirhan's notebook.
It did.
It's true. And that dress came straight out of a terrorist's notebook.
Sean Butendorf. Butendorf. It's Butendorf or something like
it's
that.
It's Butendorf.
It's a P, not an F. It's an F here in my notes, but I discovered I was wrong. What she made was a white drapey top that looked like it could have been a dress, and then what looked like silver lamé hot pants, but were really leather.
They were the most hideous, not fitting, something you'd have to wear in gym class shorts ever. And the shirt was basically t-shirt fabric, but it had two really long sleeve-like things that came off the side, which you could tie up if you wanted. It was no good.
And her sister was just freaking out in the waiting room while Sean was on the...
About to be eliminated,
and
yeah.
I think it's going to be tough for both of them if they get that panicked for each other.
Yeah.
Because unless they're both safe, they're not going to get a chance to relax ever.
Kenya, the large, bald African-American woman, made a white mermaid dress that was gorgeous. Maybe needed some more support in the chest area, but she had a very tiny model, so it was fine.
Deontay.
It looked gorgeous.
Deontay took a giant print, which everybody worried about. It was kind of a floral print. But the way he put it together, the curves
of the curves of the flower,
this matched the curves of the woman inside the dress so well that it looked 100% on purpose. And yeah. He won it. He should have. It looked great.
It was amazing. Yeah.
It shows that he doesn't just like prints. He knows what to do with them.
He knows what to do with them. One of the judges said Michelle Obama would wear this dress. And yeah, it was for someone shaped like that. And that was an amazing, amazing piece of work. I'm so glad he won.
The other one on top, Batani. I'm not sure how to pronounce her name.
Batani. She wears all these bright colors, but the fabric she chose to use was a... I don't even know what that was. It was like a heavy polyester knit, it looked like, and it was prison matron gray. And then she tried to liven it up by appliquing some white crocheted bits to it, so it looked like a tablecloth, and they went down the butt.
And also, she made the mistake of saying, well, this here was to camouflage her midsection, because she had one of the larger models. And now the judges are all very concerned about that. Say, you cannot do that. No.
They didn't say you cannot do that. They said, why would you want to camouflage her midsection?
Yeah, because now the judges are all about body positivity. Like,
that's Tim Gunn's work.
Yeah. You don't think Nina Garcia and Zach Posen have a long history of that?
Yeah, Zach Posen has made some beautiful dresses for larger women.
But they did not care for her saying that, so she kind of got in trouble there. Cha-Cha just...
Okay, Cha-Cha's dress...
Go.
He claimed... Okay, so... He got this fabric that's kind of shiny, but also gray and hideous.
Shiny and boring?
It's
sign
not
me
like,
up!
I mean, not silver. It was like a shot... It was like a gray taffeta that is shot with blue and green threads every fifth thread. So it's kind of gleamy, but it's still ugly. Then he made it into the shape of a pillowcase and put some big puffy sleeves on it, such as you would see on a circus clown. And then he found a bunch of hideous pink lame ruffles, which he sewed randomly around it so it looked like intestines. And then he said she was going to the VMAs because that's what you do. He went home.
Cha-Cha was here to go home the first week.
Right.
He
got yelled at for not respecting his model's figure because he put her in a pillowcase.
I was hoping he would be more interestingly weird, but I felt like after seeing this, that's all he could really bring to the table.
Right. Now, the big storyline of the week was Brandon. Brandon is a menswear designer who makes hip-hop inspired clothing, and he had a plus size African-American model who was gorgeous.
His main concern was that she has breasts.
His main concern was that he has never made women's clothing.
Right.
Now, we've seen pictures of the clothing he has made before. He makes big old bags. He's basically bags with sleeves. It doesn't matter what you're shaped like in them because you're wearing a bag. I don't know why he couldn't just make her a bag like everyone else, but he freaked out because it was women's wear. So he made her a little crop top and a wrap skirt. And everyone was enraptured with it.
Yeah, the judges loved it. I thought it was okay.
I thought it was fine. I felt like he whined way too much.
It's about Project Runway. It's making clothes for women.
What?
All but maybe one episode.
Yeah. Yeah, that was weird, because he's a menswear designer, and there's another guy on there that's mostly a menswear designer as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's that guy that used to be a dancer.
See? See what I mean? We know things about these people, and we don't have their names. It's Centel, right? Yeah, Centel.
Yeah, Centel. And I don't remember what he wear. He usually designs what he made. He usually designs sportswear.
Yeah, there's too many people on this episode.
And... Yeah, my only note on what he made, which I do not remember the dress at all, says, it's like Klaus Nomi in a space bag. And I have no idea what that note means.
I assume you meant it positively.
Well, if I say it's like Klaus Nomi, I certainly meant it positively. But what? I'm going to have to actually go back and look at a picture of that outfit just to figure out what I was talking about.
So I'm definitely in on this season so far. It's just such a relief to have a show that They're a little heavy-handed with their editing sometimes. There was so much Brandon in the episode.
There was too much Brandon in the episode.
In the top or was going home. But their storytelling is so clear. I appreciate knowing who these characters are.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Now, there's another show that just came back. I don't know...
Oh, what show was that?
It's the Great Food Truck Race.
Food Truck Race. We have somehow, despite our better judgment, managed to watch every season of The Great Food Truck Race.
There was one season. This was the most amazing thing I've seen in any reality show. Every single week was won by the same team.
Oh, yeah. Those guys were amazing.
It was a Korean food truck.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody knew what banh mi was yet.
Yeah, it was a banh mi truck. And their food was amazing. It was apparently like amazing.
An 8-episode season. They won every single week except the finale, because this show is all about the dumb twists.
Oh, the gimmicks.
But I have never seen dominance like that, to where you have to think somebody was thinking about just canceling the show.
Yeah, we're just going to cancel this. These guys, it's not working. There's no excitement because they're just destroying everyone. That was a pretty good season.
Yeah.
This season, we got started off with 7 teams. These are all people who do not own their own food trucks, I think.
Yeah, sometimes the teams are existing food trucks. Sometimes it's brand new people. Sometimes, originally, it was an across-the-country race. Well, not race. It would be like, we start in, let's say, San Diego, and then we go to Phoenix, and then we, you know, this time they're just staying in the South.
Right. So they're competing to get $50,000 so they can buy their own food trucks. So I'm guessing that no one in the season already has a food truck, but it seems unlikely.
It mostly seems like pretty upscale chefs. Like, everybody's talking about how this is my take on a beignet.
Yeah, there's the Braised in the South are all classically trained chefs.
But even, all right, there's this one. I just want to get to the team I care about.
Team is that?
They are called either the Breakfast Club or Brunch Squad. They call themselves Breakfast Club. Their shirts say Brunch Squad. Their truck says The Breakfast Club, and then right below that it says Eat, Sleep, Brunch.
Yeah, it's...
So I don't know what meal they're all about.
I'm getting mixed messages from them, but I also really like them because they have a guy named Mikey, who is just adorable.
Mikey introduces them saying, we're the millennial team. He's kind of flamboyant.
Oh, he's...
But he works his butt off.
To sell that food, yeah. Like I was like, oh, this guy, he's just going to lay around and put on lipstick. And
oh,
that's
no.
That's mean. Shut up. But, he's got kind of a Boy George vibe.
But where we see
physically and makeup-wise is what I mean. He's lovely.
Where we see other teams sometimes like holding up a sign and shouting at traffic, hey, come get your food. He's going out there making connections with passersby and selling product.
Yeah, he's going out and talking to people. He's great.
He is.
When they couldn't get any customers, he's like, oh, let's put on a bacon and egg costume and have a dance party. And I was like, yeah!
Now, it's
It didn't help them sell anything, but it was adorable.
In previous seasons, it's not been clear how much social media people are allowed to do. There was one season where teams could use all the social media they want, and that just meant every time they got to a new city, some teams had lines around the block.
My friend John owns a bar, so I emailed him and he said we can set up outside of there for ladies' night. Stuff like that.
This time, I don't think they can do that, but Mikey did go online and find out where people in New Orleans are talking about going tonight, so they set their truck up there and sold a bunch.
Yeah.
Like, that's a smart team. There was one, I think this season I'm talking about, where one team won everything. One of the people on the team was an MBA.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And knew everything about marketing.
Yeah, they were great.
This is a goofy show, but you can see strategies come into play a little bit.
Right. Other teams, there's a team, what's that called? Stick 'em Up Southern Food. Anything you can put on a stick. It consists of a woman who desperately wants her own show.
And she's getting one.
And her two sons.
She's
sassy.
You know how the production team clearly tells people, all right, I want you to tell me how excited you are to be going to this next thing. Or like, all right, somebody's got immunity. I need a sound clip of somebody saying, I really want immunity because that means I can't go home this week. She leans into that and does a great job of all of those.
She's
and throws
like,
in her own catchphrases.
Yeah, she's like Flo from Alice turned up to 20.
She's Flo plus Mel because she does the cooking too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Flo is a waitress.
There's also some Mama's Family in there.
Yeah, I think she's...
It's way over the top. I despise her.
As long as the show doesn't let her take over, I think she's great.
Yeah. I don't like her. She gets on my nerves, but she's great television. Yeah. So, good for her. I hope they keep her around for a while.
So, there's also Southern Frenchie. That's Southern food with a French twist. They have a picture of a French bulldog.
Yeah, I don't know what their deal is. They made beignets, but everybody made beignets. That was the challenge.
Braised in the South, their upscale comfort food. That's just three chefs who want a food
truck. Yeah, it's
three
chefs. They have way too much on their menu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What you want in a food truck, especially in this where you're only allowed to shop for a few limited ingredients each day, two or three items that you can make quickly and has a good profit margin.
Right.
That's why that banh mi truck did great, because their profit margin was through the roof, where everyone else was like,
right.
Well, I made braised steak. No, you didn't.
You're and right. Like the Breakfast Club, they're like, we're doing breakfast nachos, and we're doing one other thing. And then when the challenge gets thrown at them and they have to make a third thing, they're fine, because they've already got enough stuff.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
There's a team called Mr. Po' Boys. I think they made po' boys.
Really?
They were disadvantaged in this challenge because they're in New Orleans, where you can get po' boys anywhere, I'm thinking.
Yeah, I'm thinking that you can get a po' boy anywhere and that people already have their favorite shops and you're not gonna outshine their favorite shop.
Then there's a Wicked Good Seafood, a New England seafood truck. I think it's fun that not all the teams were actually from the South.
Yeah, they didn't do very well. They were from Nantucket, I think, and I did not even write a poem about it. I'm so good.
They also had actual chefs. Like, they're called Wicked Good Seafood. They try... I feel like they want to feel like they're Boston townies, but they were too smart. And then there was Papi Chulo's Empanadas. And this brings up something that I didn't like in previous seasons. There were some seasons of Food Truck Race where everybody was required to all cook the same thing every...
Right, it's like this... Right, like this week they had the beignet challenge. Everyone had to make their own spin on a beignet.
Problem is, when a truck called Papi Chulo's Empanadas comes at you, you want an empanada to
you
be
do.
Told that you're not allowed to make what it says on your truck. I think that's a disadvantage.
It is. I would be very sad if I went to the empanadas truck and they gave... Wait. I will never be sad if anyone gives me a beignet.
Yeah, I mean, like,
I'm
okay
pretty
with
fond of
beignets,
them.
But also empanadas.
So, yeah, that's kind of... Yeah, I really don't like the twists on this show, because they're always
Tyler
dumb.
Florence is just the worst,
he
isn't
is.
He?
He is. Oh, there's a popular drink called the... What was it? The
Hurricane. The
Hurricane. That's a little insensitive to have a hurricane challenge in New Orleans, if you ask me.
They invented it there.
But whatever.
But they had to make a... special dish with the ingredients of a hurricane. And it turns out they mean the fruit ingredients, not the rum ingredients.
Yeah.
So everybody just took some citrus and threw it on something that was fine.
Yeah.
The empanada team had trouble because it was too hot for their empanada maker, which was weird because...
Well, it wasn't their empanada maker. Their dough would not stick to itself.
It wouldn't crimp, so they had to hand crimp it.
Which is weird for food from South America because you would think South America would be very hot.
Yeah. So... this is a super fun show. I really enjoy it. It's not very good.
No.
To give you an idea of the range that we're talking about.
Oh.
This is not a judged show. There is okay. Let me rephrase that. There is a point where a guest judge says who won a challenge, but the winner of that challenge just gets 100 actual dollars.
Which you get to add to your pot.
Because
to buy your next food supplies with.
No. You get added to your pot for the end of the show where the person who goes home is the team that made the least money.
Right.
This is an objective reality show.
Sure.
The team that sold the most and got the most profits wins. I really like that there's not, at the end of the show, there's no judge favoritism. It's just, here's who made the most money. Actual money. That's what counts in the food truck business.
Right. I actually think that's fine.
So the Breakfast Club, or possibly the Brunch Squad, made $420.
Their business is called the Breakfast Club. The people that work at it are called the Brunch Squad.
He also said, "We are the Breakfast Club," a few times.
Well, yes, my business is called the Breakfast Club. As in, I work at Scarecrow Video,
plug.
But I am part of the Movie Nerd Squad.
All right. Anyway, they won. They made $420 over the 2 days of the competition. I like how low that number is, too.
Yeah, it's really sad.
Because everybody was doing pretty bad. It looked like they might have been sent out on like a Tuesday afternoon to try to sell people.
Yeah. Yeah, there was like just empty streets, and they're just parked on this empty street corner. Now, one time, one of the trucks did get lucky in that someone in the hospital pulled a fire alarm, and so there was a fire drill, and everybody had to come out on the street where they were.
That's a pretty advanced tactic. I don't recommend doing it at a hospital, but if you're in front of an office building...
You could do it.
Now, so $420 is the absolute best someone did. The bottom level was Wicked Good Seafood, who made $192 over the 2 days.
Yeah, that's really sad.
That's less than half of what Breakfast Club did.
Well, Wicked Good, when their food wasn't selling, remember they said, we're going to just keep marking it down until people buy it. So even if they did sell a lot of food, they are screwed.
Well, also, in the beignet challenge, they sold almost none. Nobody wanted to buy a beignet from a truck called Wicked Good Seafood.
Yeah.
So,
well, it was a shrimp and grits beignet, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't sound so bad, but yeah, I agree.
If you gave it to me, I would eat it, and thank you very much.
Also, I don't know how I'd feel about buying seafood in New Orleans from a truck that is so clearly branded from another part of the country.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys, maybe that seafood was fresh in Nantucket.
I mean, but this show really undercuts the majesty of food trucks because you see everybody rush into Costco, buy the cheapest meat they can find.
Well, that's true, but I've never found food trucks to be particularly majestic.
That's what I like about this show is you actually see people worried about their profit margins and cost overruns.
Yeah.
So I'm certainly watching the rest of this season. I've watched every episode of The Great Food Truck Race. I know it's terrible.
That's okay. We know it's terrible, but we still watch it, so we're going to stick with it for a while. I think we're going to step back from Forged in Fire, just because...
There's only so many ways we can describe
this piece of metal.
This was a weird sword. This one had a weird thing poking off it, and we don't know why.
Right. This week was a good week.
They had coal forges. They had four people who knew how to use coal forges, which is an improvement over the last coal forge episode.
They had to make a metal frame for the knife tang, which is something I've never heard of in my life.
And they didn't do a great job of explaining why they had to do that.
Yeah.
They had a guy I liked a lot who said he was a blacksmith in a theme park in Buena Park, California, which we're pretty sure is Knott's Berry Farm. But he went home.
Yeah. I did like him. He had a great attitude and was pretty laid back.
Yeah. So we're probably not going to be talking about Forge and Fire that much. I still encourage everybody to watch it because it is super fun. And you get to find out what a Campolan is. This is one of the ones where they had to make a big weird sword. And they did not really sell me on the sword.
No,
at the
they
end of it.
Didn't. They had like the sword's got this weird little spur coming off the end, but they didn't explain why.
Yeah. Sometimes they say, we're making this weird weapon, and then by the end of it, everybody's in love with it. This time they said, we're making this weird weapon, and they made a weird weapon, and then we're done. So that's it for Forge and Fire, I think, just because there's so many other shows coming in. Like, we've got Ink Master still slogging along. We've got
slogging is the word for it.
Project Runway and Great Food Truck Race and Game Face, which I like very much.
I like Game Face a lot. Yeah. I like Project Runway a lot. So we've got stuff we like. If you guys are really, really sad that we're not going to cover that we're not going to cover Forged in Fire anymore, you can write to us.
Yep.
And we will laugh and laugh.
And you can follow us on Twitter at @VillainEdit.
Yes.
And that will do it for this week. Do you have any final words?
I do not have any final words. Were you going to kill me?
How ironic. Okay, bye.